Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, I imagine that everyone out there who watched the 1968 movie 2001: A Space Odyssey mainly remembers the fight for his life that the human astronaut, Dave, had to engage in with the onboard computer called HAL. That was 55 years ago, and it already reflected a fear among many people about how powerful computers could eventually become. Lately, there has been a heated debate about artificial intelligence, or AI, and the potential dangers it presents as it rapidly gains capabilities. Even tech super entrepreneurs like Elon Musk and Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak, people you'd think would be all for new technology, are expressing serious misgivings about the possibilities. And even congressional representatives, not usually people who are out in front on matters dealing with high tech, are weighing in on how this research should proceed. My guest to talk with us about all of this is Dr. Oded Netzer, a professor in Columbia University's Business School who focuses on the use of AI and business analytics to understand customer behavior and guide the decisions that companies make. Welcome, Dr. Netzer.
Hi, Court. A pleasure to be with you here and with the listeners.
Yeah, thanks for being on. I hope I can call you Oded.
By all means.
Great. So I think the place to start is by talking about ChatGPT. Which many of our listeners may have heard of lately, and it's an AI software application that's going viral across the internet. In fact, launched just this past November, it reached 100 million users in 2 months, and that's a speed that no other software has even come close to reaching. Instagram, for example, took 30 months, 15 times as long to get to the same number of users. Can you give us, Oded, an overview of ChatGPT? Like, how does the program work, and what does it do for users?
Yeah, I mean, this was super exciting back in November when OpenAI, the company that introduced ChatGPT into the public, where the idea was to create a human-like conversation, interactions with a human-like machine, a chat, but chat that is actually operated by a robot or by a machine. And I have to admit that personally, when I opened ChatGPT for the first time, I was one of the first 1 million users, which took them a week, which was way, way faster than, again, any other, as you mentioned, innovation. I encounter these rare moments in technology innovations where I thought to myself, wow, the world will never look the same. Really was a really unique leapfrogging, if you will, an innovation that we haven't seen before. And if you want just to maybe put it in context, compare this ChatGPT, for those of you that got a chance to interact with this, to our interaction with a Siri or Alexa or Google Assistant. It is so much more fluent, richer, can actually have a repeated conversation. So you're asking a question, then you correct your question or provide a clarification. It actually reacts to what you say. Truly was a leap in innovation that I was very excited about, shared the risks and the concerns that some of them you mentioned, I'm sure we'll talk about, but definitely was very excited about where it is going.
Yeah, so you mentioned, Siri, which we've all used, and Alexa, which many of us use. And so we kind of know what those things do. I mean, they find information for you, and they find music and play what you want them to play and that kind of thing. But I think ChatGPT is much more powerful. So what other kinds of things can it do other than those conveniences?
Yeah, so what ChatGPT does, practically, it was trained. It's a language model. What does a language model mean? It's a model that is able to predict the next word and generate the next word by predicting one word after the other based on being trained on a large amount of data. When I say large, I mean truly large, meaning think the entire internet. So it's uses pretty much was trained pretty much on the entire internet and many conversation between humans. So it learns how to interact and communicate like humans and can provide information, can communicate in a way that is very much human-like. In fact, it is trained on something called a Turing model, such that a human or a machine cannot detect whether the text generated was generated by a machine or by a human. The tasks that it can do tasks like ask it a search query. I want to know, about a particular person. I want to know about a particular event. It will go and write, again, more in a human-like environment. If you want to kind of get maybe the analogy for that, if you go to your doctor and the doctor just informed you that you have a particular condition, you would ask them, what does that mean? Usually the doctor would give you a minute of explanation of what it is that you're suffering from. If you would go to Google and do the same thing, which many of us do as soon as we come back home and we kind of check that condition, Google will give me 10 documents. Imagine that instead of the 10 documents, right, that your doctor, instead of telling you in English what you really are suffering from, the doctor will tell you, well, here are 10 articles, go read them. That's about what Google does. What ChatGPT does instead, it's actually more like what the doctor is actually doing, giving you more of two paragraphs, explaining in English a summary of everything that I've read in these 10 articles about the topic. It is very useful in programming. One of the best applications I've seen of it is programming, both for programmers in terms of helping them write, as well as for people who actually don't know programming and say, here are the bios of the people in my organization. Can you create a web page of the people working in the company in HTML code? Another way maybe to think about it is we all have experience with the autofill, whether it's the autofill on our Word editor or the autofill on your Gmail, where it kind of complete the next word. You can use it as autofill on steroids, as can you fill in the next two paragraphs as opposed to the next word?
Yeah, so that, kind of intelligent facility and versatility is useful, but it's what a lot of people are afraid of, that ChatGPT can facilitate scams or even cyber attacks and the spread of misinformation. In other words, it can provide a lot of valid sounding information that's not true, for example. And I read that the CEO of ChatGPT's maker, you said it's a company called OpenAI, said that AI could be, and he said, quote, unbelievably good, or AI could make, quote, lights out for all of us, which is pretty scary. And this is the guy who makes and sells it talking that way. OpenAI isn't the only player in this sphere. What are some of the other companies involved?
Yeah, so first to your last question, the other companies involved, as you would expect, I mean, Google is obviously deep into it. Actually, there is an interesting thing to pay attention with Google, which is probably OpenAI was not the company we would expect that would be the leader in that area. Companies like Google or Amazon or Facebook have much richer computing power, data sets, and programmers actually to make the leap in it. And maybe there is a reason why it wasn't Google, for example, that created ChatGPT. But because Google provides the Google search and Google makes quite a bit of money out of the advertising on the search, they may not have the interest to be the innovator in creating more of a conversation-like search, because that's maybe less profitable advertising-wise. This is what is often called the innovator's dilemma, where an innovator has a dilemma whether to innovate because the current status quo is pretty comfortable. But OpenAI was the one that actually opened the field for many of them to race. And in fact, there was a code red alerted out in Google immediately the day after, realizing we can't wait anymore with the innovator dilemma. We got to innovate. And they were pretty ready for it because, again, they have the tools and skills for it. You talked about the lights out or maybe the risk. I think that we need to be clear where the risk is. The risk is not so much with the machine itself. The risk is with humans using the machines for the wrong purposes. And if anything, the machine is dangerous, not because it's not good, but because it is very good, because it sounds like humans. And that is risky. It is risky because kind of a parallel innovation that happens, something called deepfake, right? Deepfake is this idea that you can create videos of celebrities. Think about Barack Obama, Donald Trump, or Joe Biden. They're speaking, but they're actually not speaking. The content was created by AI or created by human, but AI makes it look like as if they've been saying these words. So it can lead to misinformation in that sense. And people may be able now to generate conversations that sound like humans, but were not created like humans. It's not always bad, but it can be used for the wrong purposes.
Yeah, not just conversations, but potentially videos of, you know, actually a very realistic video of a celebrity or someone doing something criminal or nefarious or, you know, that they didn't do at all. But I mean, let's step back before we get too much into the dangerous parts of it, which are, I think, where the greatest interest lies, but let's talk more about the potential upside of AI and, you know, what kinds of good it could bring. We got a lot to cover here, so we don't want to get into too much detail about any of these things, but just kind of run through, if you would, Odette, a few of the good things that AI can bring us.
Well, when you're talking to a professor, you always need to preface, let's not get too much into the weeds, right?
I know. So, we may have to make this an hour.
fair enough. As I mentioned, I was super excited when it came out. So really, it is something that I was excited about and excited because of the opportunities. I really think it opens a big opportunities for what we can do. And specifically, by the way, in doing the basic things, if you take a life of a leader in an organization, think about how much time we spend responding to emails. 80% of these emails that we respond to are very mundane and the response is pretty mundane. And even the 20% that are not mundane, and 80% of the email itself is pretty mundane. And then I need to tweak a few words. If we will get a machine that actually allows us to respond in a human-like way, that I could even teach the machine to respond more with my style, that can save us so much time that we can actually use to do better things rather than responding to emails. This is a type of things, for example, that I've been talking about in a book I recently published called Decisions Over Decimals, Striking the Balance Between Intuition and Information, how leaders should spend their time not on the what, on what's in the data, but on the so what and the now what. What does it mean? What are we going to do about it? The more we let tools like ChatGPT doing the what for us, whether the what involves writing an email or the what involves creating a table, the more we have time to focus our time on what really matters, on the productive of humans, which is interpreting, getting insights, and eventually making decisions.
Yeah, so let's turn now to the dark side of AI. And it seems to me that much of that is just the flip side of the positive features. For example, instead of just increasing worker productivity, like you just described a little bit, AI could actually replace human workers as it becomes more capable. And actually, I read in a recent survey about 23% of employees working in the software and tech fields said that they're concerned about losing their job due to ChatGPT. In fact, I think that's where I first ran across you in that article that I was reading online. So what are some of the other specific dangers in the near term, not, you know, 10 years out even, but fairly near term of AI?
So at least on the job replacement aspect, I'm less concerned there in the sense that history tells us that when these technologies come about and when we get to a point where we have technology that can increase productivity, what often happens, it doesn't replace people. It shifts them to do the jobs that, again, are often either more exciting or more even profitable for the organization. Just to give you an example, ATMs, automated teller machines. This is almost by definition saying we're going to take tellers in banks and just replace them with a machine. The interesting result was that we didn't have fewer bankers. We actually had more bankers in commercial banks. The reason was because banks don't make a lot of money by handing cash to people, right? Giving them the money that already is sitting in their checking account. Banks make money out of loans and credit cards and these type of transactions. So really what these companies have done, the banks, they've shifted a lot of these tellers to still be bank employees and tellers, but interacting and working with much more difficult tasks and exciting tasks, more interesting tasks as well. Sitting in a bank and just handing money is way less interesting than discussing with a customer their wealth management and so on, where a lot of the bank employees are working in these days. And actually, it increased the number of people working in these jobs, did not decrease them. I can see similar trajectory when it comes specifically to the work displacement of ChatGPT. I'm not sure we're going to have fewer coders. I think the coders will focus on the places where they should. We will need to write many more codes in order to create many more ChatGPTs anyway. So I suspect that actually it will be more of a productivity boost than actually fully replace employees, though there may be places where it would lead to replacement or at least, again, changing of skills for these employees.
Okay, well, that's an optimistic outlook, and I hope you're right. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis, and we're talking with Professor Oded Netzer from Columbia University about artificial intelligence, AI, and its powers and its threats. So like many things in technology, it has a good side and a bad side. And there are a lot of people concerned about the bad side nowadays. I gather that a basic goal of AI researchers has always been to make AI as much like humans as possible. But I think that's where much of the danger lies. If AI gets sufficiently human-like, how can you tell an AI robot from a human? Certainly on email or on Facebook or on the phone, it can be hard to do, but ultimately, maybe even in person. So isn't that kind of a trap, Odette, that makes humans superfluous and obsolete in the end? Do you think that's a risk that could happen?
I think that a couple of risks that I think you mentioned, Kurt, that I think we should be thinking through. The first one has to do with, this is more in the short term, the current state of these machines. They are predictive models. They are not truth-telling models, meaning they need to sound like humans that need not be correct. In other words, if you were to ask me now, what did you have for lunch? I could answer a salad and I can answer a burger. Both of them would sound very much human-like. If I'll answer, I ate a calculator for lunch, you would tell me, well, that's unlikely. And the machine would figure out that doesn't sound like a human. But both of the answers of a salad or a burger are both equally likely and therefore human-like, but one of them is true and the other one is not true.
Yeah.
The biggest risk currently of the at least the current generation of ChatGPT and its competitors, if you will, or other tools, that they don't do fact-checking. And they get into this state called hallucination, where they make up data. The reason why they make up data is because their predictive model, they use the most likely next word to appear. So for example, to give you a very concrete example for hallucination, if you will ask ChatGPT to cite its sources, what it would do is it would actually make up a paper. In fact, it would make up an author, a year, and a paper. Now, the author is likely to be an author that is a true expert. It wouldn't make up a name. The name is a real name of a person, most likely the biggest researcher in the area. By the way, may have not written that paper, but they will make up the name. It would make up a year, which is around the year when these researchers have been working about the topic. And it would even make up a title, which is, by the way, probably the title that should have been the title of the paper written in this area, but was not. So that's the nature of a predictive model. So at this point, there is a truth-telling problem with these algorithms being more of a predictive model. So I think they will resolve it, by the way. I think that the technology give it a year or with the speed in which things are moving, maybe even less than that. They'll be able to try, at least try and create more of a fact-checking type of tools, but we should pay attention to it, and particularly in today's world where we live in a world of misinformation, it's yet another opportunity to create misinformation and spread this misinformation. So that's one risk, at least, that I definitely see, and that's very much in the short term with these tools. A second risk maybe that you mentioned, which is, if they sound like humans, how do we know who said it, right? There is actually a copyright issue here. There are two types of copyright issues, if you will, with ChatGPT. So one copyright issue is it uses sources and then creates text, but it doesn't necessarily give proper citations to the text it is using. So to what extent there is a copyright issue? I'm not a lawyer, so I leave these to the lawyers. But one maybe that is more closer to my area as a professor in university and so on as an academic, do I need to acknowledge when I've written something and it was not written by me? If I'm going to write an entire academic paper or even a section of the academic paper that is word by word copy-pasted from ChatGPT, do I need to acknowledge that? Because we just created a machine that speaks like humans and writes like humans. So if it becomes so good, then I probably need to acknowledge. In fact, we already have a few papers where ChatGPT has been added as a co-author. So he did acknowledge ChatGPT as being one of the writers of the paper. But that is a risk.
Yeah, so just in that example, I can imagine that a freshman, one of your students, if you even teach freshmen, could have ultimately write a paper as professional as one you, a tenured professor, might write. So that's a danger. But anyway, I think what people seem most worried about is that AI technology is advancing much faster than our understanding of its social and economic implications. I mean, the kinds of things we've been talking about, and we don't know how to steer that advancement away from the potentially bad and toward the good. So it's kind of a wide open, wild frontier right now. And is there a way to control this powerful technology? And how worried are you about that?
I am. I am worried about it. I do think that the recent letters that has been created by several of the tech leaders, as well as several academics, experts in an AI to pause the progress, I am very sympathetic to the arguments being made that if we are going to create such a leap in innovation, we do need to make sure that regulators follow through with it, right? And that we are careful about the way we are using it. So to that extent, I'm very sympathetic to the call. I'm not very optimistic, by the way, that we can pause anything like that. I also think it's a bit ironic that it comes from people like Elon Musk, who, if you actually think about the tweet, take Twitter, for example, or social media, we face exactly the same problem with that. We have raced towards social media with very little regulation, and we are now trying maybe to put some regulation on it. So a bit ironic, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be going forward, do better job than we did in the past. So I'm still sympathetic to Elon Musk calling at least for AI to be managed. I'm not sure we'll be able to pause. I'm not sure, given that there are so many parties involved in creating these tools. But I do think that the regulators should start thinking about these problems yesterday. And as we are progressing with this tool, make sure that we won't get to where we are today with things like social media, where very little regulation came or too late about data privacy, for example, came in too late and too little at a point where it's very difficult to curb this. So I think the call is right. I'm not sure if it calls to a pause, but I hope it would wake up regulators to start working on it today.
Yeah, for people who haven't been aware of what you're talking about right here, it's just very recent, and over 1,000 of the lead developers, including major investors like Elon Musk, signed an open letter calling for the immediate suspension of training AI systems, I think for a period of 6 months or something, and because of their fears of the kind of threats it poses to humanity, and they're calling for government regulation of AI development. But, you know, a lot of people think that a six-month pause, even if it were observed, is just silly, because we won't be able in 6 months to understand what kind of governors or restrictions we need to put on AI development. And even then, when you put these restrictions on it, there are going to be plenty of people who violate those, right? So, I mean, it's just, it can get like a wildfire in a dry season in a forest. It can get out of control no matter how much intelligence you bring to bear in trying to control it, right? So that's, I think, is the fear. And I don't know. I mean, do you think that it's controllable, really?
I don't think that the progress is controllable. I think that the progress will continue to happen as it happens with data privacy, right? Unlike data privacy and unlike social media, that what happened there is that the regulator would be involved earlier on. And I think this is exactly the right time for regulators to start carefully already thinking about it, more than thinking, even acting on these. But we need to remember that in all of these things, it is rarely the AI that does the harm. These are humans who are using AI in the wrong way.
Sure.
So where we need to put the regulation is on the use of AI and not on the AI development itself. I think that will be very difficult to curb, because someone out there will be able to break the barrier around. It's very hard to fix things by stopping technology. It's much easier, and easier is not, it's by no means easy here.
Not easy, no.
Is to put the regulation more on humans to of what they can and cannot do with the technology that is evolving. So that's why I would encourage the effort to be on the use and less on the progress.
Well, the trouble is that it's the law-abiding people who end up abiding by the law, and those who don't. But you know, I mentioned at the outset that many people in Congress on both sides of the aisle, which is unusual now, started calling for ways to rein in AI development just recently. I mean, these are not people who normally pay a lot of attention to technology, but it's another indication that this is serious. And do you think anything is likely to come of that call for regulation beyond just sort of band-aids that can easily be ripped off?
I hope so. I mean, again, I'm not involved in the regulation itself, but I truly hope so. I also think that if take at least some comfort, right, if you look at ChatGPT versus previous generations, one of the things that OpenAI did very well, and one of the reasons, by the way, why companies like Google stayed on the sidelines, at least until the development of ChatGPT, was because of fear of the wrong use of it. And what OpenAI did is they put much better guardrails of taking this machine off the rails, if you will. Quite a few years back, Microsoft introduced this tool called TY. It was similar to ChatGPT, but many generations earlier. And within 48 hours, it started becoming totally crazy, racist, sexist, and so on. They had to cut it within 48 hours. The current approaches are much more tame. And I'll give technology here the credit for, and the companies developing it, the credit for doing so. And I hope that's a good sign for possibly where I'm heading. I'll just add maybe one more thing related to the issue of humans using wrong AI. On this flip side of it, and we talked about human displacement by these tools, when you think about, you know, people say, oh, I will be replaced by AI. you will not be replaced by AI. You will be replaced by someone who knows what to do with AI.
Well, I wish we had another 15 minutes at least to talk about this, because it's a big, important topic that's going to affect us all eventually, and everybody's going to end up needing to be aware of it to some extent. But there's a point at which AI can train itself, okay? And it doesn't need human programmers to do that. And this is a real thing in the future. It's not there yet, but it's called the singularity. So do you have any remote idea? I know it's not your field. How far away, roughly, that point of the singularity might be?
From everything I understand from the experts in AI and as well as my working in the area, I mean, we are not anywhere close to singularity. We're not anywhere close to what even is called the, you know, artificial general intelligence, which is the machines taking over, if you will. I think this is much more Hollywood than reality. But, and I think that's important to realize, to the first part of your sentence, the machine teaching itself, that's already is happening. So machines are, even ChatGPT is already using something called reinforcement learning, where it gets rewarded for good actions and takes itself on points off for bad answers and so on. So machines are learning to become better and better. Taking over, I think we have quite a few years.
Yeah, I think the singularity is more like, I don't know, to put it in simple terms, if human IQs are measured between, let's say, 50 and 180 or something, I think we're talking about a point where the machine can explode in its capability to the point that its IQ is in the thousands, you know, and it makes humans look no smarter than the average household pet or something, you know. So I don't know. Oh, gosh, we have to end it here. I hate to do it, Odette, but let me ask you this big question that you can answer in 25 words or less.
Yeah.
Overall, how big a threat to humanity do you think AI is? And knowing how technologists, in my view, typically plunge ahead like a blind mole doing what they do because it's exciting and also pays the bills, what can we realistically do to mitigate the threat?
I think we have quite a few years of very much enjoying with AI before this becomes a real threat. I actually think that replacing our true understanding and ability to understand context and imagine and the things we do as humans, I think we are in good shape of actually benefiting as opposed to suffering from AI. To mitigate, I think we truly need good regulations, both by the regulators, but also in terms of curbing the type of use of AI to make sure that we don't indeed get into places where we shouldn't, that could really be damaging. But I'm more optimistic than pessimistic when it comes to AI. And again, not so much because of the excitement of technological innovation, but truly because of taking the mundane tasks that currently we are using our brains for that could be replaced. And I think it will take a long time before it takes the really difficult tasks that we do with our brain.
Okay, well, I hope your optimism is warranted, and we are going to have to leave it there. So, Dr. Netzer, let me mention your book once again. It's called Decisions Over Decimals, Striking the Balance Between Intuition and Information. And the author is O-D-E-D-N-E-T-Z-E-R, Odette Netzer. And Dr. Netzer, I want to thank you so much for being on with us on American Variety.
Thank you, Kurt, and thank you for hosting me, and thank you for all of the listeners. It was a fascinating discussion about a topic that I'm obviously super excited about.
Yep, and I'll add my thanks to all of you out there for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.